You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
They're maybe 2,000 over the income or three, so it's not even marginally big that they're over their income, but because they're over the threshold, it's putting them out for social housing. But also they're in a position they can't apply for HAP or RAS support either. So, like, it's kind of the new poor.
A lot of people who phone us are on their own. Are they living their own? Are they feel they're on their own? So loneliness could be the underlying problem.
The really big thing for us is to educate customers as to what goes into what bin and what doesn't go into your bin at all. There's certain things that should only go to a textile bank or a civic community site. So really, your mixed waste bin should be the last resort. You should exhaust any other option.
Any deal, any agreement, any arrangement that we came to with the European Union would involve a backstop. So people talk about, let's have a Norway or let's have a Canada. Everything involves a backstop.
Well, the league tables are a matter of great interest to the media and public for a short space of time. To be honest with you, school leaders aren't terribly obsessed with the league tables, as say, because they don't give a concept of the value added in schools.
Oh, baby, it's bad out there.
Say what's in this tray.
But there's no caps to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight.
That's gone off very quickly. Baby, it's cold outside, and it's unsuitable line, which has been making headlines this week. You also heard there from Aisling Corcoran of Respond on housing, from Anne Dempsey of Senior Line discussing loneliness, Michelle Nagel of Clean Ireland Recycling on recycling. Prime Minister Theresa May, we're not talking Brexit today, but, you know, it is the bin story of the week, but we're going to give it a break. And also, we talked to School Field League Tables. Our clip there was from Clive Byrne of the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals. To discuss some of these stories now, I'm joined in studio by this week's Friday panel, Diarmaid McMahon, President of the Ennis Chamber of Commerce and part of Sherry Fitzgerald McMahon in Ennis, Sharon Cahir of Cahir Company of Solicitors and a former President of Ennis Chamber, and Brian Meaney as well, former Clare County Councillor of the Greens and latterly of Fianna Fáil. And good morning to you all. And thanks very much for joining us on the programme this morning. We talked housing on the programme yesterday, Diarmaid McMahon, in the context of this trap that was discussed at a council meeting during the week, which isn't new, but is certainly a prevalent issue. Earning too much to qualify for social housing, not earning enough to qualify for a mortgage, being part of the new poor or the squeezed middle, as they were described yesterday. Are those people, and is this current upcoming generation destined to a lifetime of, maybe not a lifetime, but certainly a protracted period of not being able to own a home?
I think protracted period, certainly. And look, where we are is, it's a function of what's happened over the last 10 years. I was thinking about this morning, and I was kind of remembering back to my economics lectures in college many years ago. And any production function is made up of three different things: land, labour, and capital. Mm. All right. So the labour part of that, the actual construction sector, was basically decimated in the last 10 years and had to rebuild itself from scratch. Land went through massive changes in terms of zoning, dezoning. A huge amount of land was dezoned during the recession. Didn't really matter when you weren't building.
Yes.
But then as you come out of recession, it becomes a problem.
Well, we did a report saying that there was copious amounts of unnecessary land that was zoned for residential use, as I recall.
Possibly so, I suppose, if you want to take an approach. It's up to the planners, I would think, to decide, you know, where land should be zoned and how it should be produced, and that it's done in a structured way. And just for it to be zoned, just because it's coloured on a map and zoned, doesn't mean it's actually usable. Mm. There is a difference between zoned land and serviced zoned land that you can actually do something with. And the last part of that puzzle, so land, labour, and the last one is capital, the availability of money to actually produce housing. And what we did a number of years back was we basically outsourced the production of social and affordable housing to the private sector. The private sector collapsed, and then you're left in a position where it just takes years to put all of those pieces back together again. We're starting to get there. I think a really important part of that as well for people to realise is, and people can't understand, you know, why can't these builders just build houses? Why can't they just, they need a profit, and they don't need a profit because, you know, they're in business, they have to have a profit, but if they don't get a profit, they can't actually get money from a bank to finance them to to build the houses. Yeah, yeah. During the downturn as well, another thing that happened was that the building regulations increased dramatically in terms of all new houses now must be A energy rated. That is a good thing. That is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, but what it has done is it's dramatically increased the cost of construction. So the upfront cost of actually getting a unit into a field has increased dramatically well. So it's moved that starting line away from production.
And all of that means that there are so many people out there who simply can't afford a home.
They can't. But there's a few funny things going on at the moment as well. I think there is production actually coming. It's in the pipeline, and I think that will change quite a bit over the next 2 years. There is production coming. The prices have finally, the market has finally recovered to a point where houses can be built. We've seen that even in the town here. That process has just started. The prices have just reached that point where you're kind of getting over the lip.
Not affordable, but viable.
I'd have a couple of comments within that. I did listen to a late night radio program last night where there was the construction sector was kind of saying, look, the central bank needs to lift this limit in terms of the multiples of income because that's inhibiting the process as well. I'd be a little bit concerned about that. I definitely don't want Ireland to go back to where it was before.
Boston, yeah.
As long as the multiples are right and it's sustainable and that works. But if we're multiplying the construction sector's wages in order to build houses for people who work in the construction sector, that didn't work. Yeah. We shouldn't go there again.
Brian Meaney, what do you make of these limits? They're set by central government, to be clear, in terms of social housing. And if you earn too much, you can't qualify.
It's a particular income band that applies to housing. It also applies to health. I know a number of people who are in the situation that they're not earning enough to get a medical card or a Dr. Roney card, and they're earning too much. They're not earning enough to pay for medical insurance. So these people have to fund their own healthcare. Similar situation in the housing market. There is I hate using the word metric, but there is a, I'd like to see an assessment undertaken of the people who took mortgages during the Celtic Tiger era who would not be able to qualify for mortgages at this stage. So I just could look back and see people who got mortgages ordinarily.
Probably a large number, but at least the terms of the mortgages wouldn't qualify now.
But managed to pay those mortgages. What we hear about are the negative ones, the people who overreached and weren't able to meet the repayments. But I know of many people who in ordinary circumstances, like we have now, as you have mentioned, with the central bank rules in relation to accessing mortgages, that would never have been able to get onto the property market because their incomes were too low. But yet they were, and these are responsible people who go to work, pay their taxes, and they pay their mortgage. Might be a fair income, fair whack of their income, but they're doing it.
They got by.
Now, we do need to look at that metric. I hate using the word, but there's that cohort of people. It has never been fully assessed. I've never seen any report on it. All we hear are the people who have
who were behind,
the number of people in arrears, the number of mortgages that are going into being sold off to vulture funds. And I think we need...
So we can loosen the limits, you think?
We need to make that assessment. Has that assessment been made? And we do need to loosen the limits because the limits are quite tough.
It has always been very difficult to
get onto the property market. But there were means in the past by which we could. And I got a refusal from three banks. This was back in the 90s. I wasn't able to get a mortgage. But what I was able to get was onto the shared ownership scheme with Clare County Council. That scheme no longer exists. There are a number of other schemes, but they're not fully utilised. Nobody accesses them. I bought my house. The council had a share in the equity. I had to pay rent on that. But over a period of time, I was able to buy out the council's equity in the house.
And you got onto
it. I remortgaged. And I now had my house, which gained in value, which I bought for, it sounds like such a paltry sum of money, £37,000. With a bit of help from me, my father, to get the deposit, and was able to sell that, made a profit until I moved up along the property ladder.
And that sort of thing is needed. I want to move it on a bit.
That is what is needed. That is what it is. And government intervention at that very simple level to allow people to access the first step.
Sharon?
Yeah, I think that there are two, to use Brian's word, metrics here we're talking about. One is the central bank rules that are really, really strict and that have come in following a very difficult period in Irish economics and the recession. So I would agree with Diarmaid that changing the way in which that structure is there at the moment and that the strong rules the central bank has, we should think twice before changing those, because we are now well into this bounce back. I think it has surprised people on the West Coast how quickly it is, it seems to be there and people are out spending. So it's very easy for people to forget what austerity we've gone through and then go back into this credit line, and a mortgage is just another one of those. But I do think, pulling on from what Brian has said, that because everything is changing and because there is a challenge in the system with regards to housing, certainly there may be a role for the government and the local authorities to look at other structures they can put in place to assist people to get on that first rung of the ladder. So just because there's what is in place at the moment doesn't mean that should always stay what it is. And I do think it is very hard for people that if the local authorities where they're going and there is this cut-off level, then it's extremely hard, because again, going back to what Brian has said, regardless of whether people wanted to pay a mortgage, couldn't pay a mortgage, they've been in distress, there are a lot of people, and I meet them, not every day as much as I have done over the last number of years, where people have decisions to make, whether they'll give up the house that they're in, whether they'll make a deal with the bank and maybe, okay, change a different... Having an alternative to giving up your house or going into some of the deals that are before people, having an alternatives are not there at the moment. So I do feel for people, and there are more than we give credit for at times in our local community, people that are still under pressure, trying to look after their family. Absolutely. And then decide to say, look, can I just park this debt, figure it out and leave it behind and move on in something new so that people's lives can move on. It's less about the debt and a lot of the people I'm meeting. It's more about choosing to just detach from what was and what's been horrendous for 10 years and move forward. Say, you know what, this is life. I can live it as it is. Let's find another way to move forward.
I just want to let anybody come in on this, but to what extent in this is a factor that we have owned our homes in Ireland, and that we are an anti-rental nation, and in we have much higher rates of home ownership than most of the European countries. If society was happy to just rent throughout our lives, this wouldn't be a big issue.
There's certainly an element of that, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You know what I mean? And I suppose other European countries would have better structures than we would have.
But should we get those structures? Be the solution? Could be at least part of the solution.
Absolutely. I mean, I even listened to a program last night where, 60% of the housing in Vienna is publicly supplied. Do you know what I mean? It's effectively social and affordable housing. There's definitely a part to play for the state within that, and it's taking time for that to be put together. And I think the one of those three factors I mentioned earlier, I think land is the most important one. The availability of land and the price that's attributed to land and the serviceability of it. And there is a direct... You can't change the cost of construction a whole lot. The builder's got to have a margin. So the only one that's left is land. And there is a relationship between the value of the land and that multiple in income. If the multiple in income doesn't increase, the land basically stays the same. If that starts going up, the question is, does the land price start going up? And then you're just chasing your tail.
I just look around and see so many green fields and so many empty homes and kind of wonder, why are we doing this so badly?
I don't know there's as many empty homes as you might think.
Oh, I agree with you on that, actually.
But green fields, be careful. There's a big difference between a green field and a serviceable green
field. I understand that. No, I get that, but... if we were doing it right, land is there, I'm not saying it. There's room for improvement, is what I'm saying.
I do think culturally, though, there can be a shift. And now, because we have so many people that have moved here from abroad, that shift will happen, albeit slow because it's Ireland, over time. And had we the right accommodations that may support and facilitate families to live in different accommodations, it would be part of the solution. Two-bed apartment is predominantly what's there. Once upon a time, we began to say there weren't enough one-bed, apartments. But here in the psyche, the idea of wealth creation, building a nest egg, having security into the future is all around having the house. Get the mortgage paid off, then you have the house, then you'll have something. Maybe you'll downsize, maybe you won't. In other countries, the wealth creation conversation takes a different route in that I'll pay a rent, I'll get a a long-term rent over a period of time. It's fixed and there'll be incremental increases. And then I have my income whereby I'll now manage it in a different way to increase my wealth.
Of course,
by using
yes.
So it's a mindset, and we're not talking about it here in Ireland yet, despite the crash to go, you know, with Aircom shares. The world and its mother bought Aircom shares because we were all going to have a shareholding. And I meet everybody now and we joke. I said, did you ever buy a share since? And people go, oh no, I'd never touch shares. So, but that didn't happen with the crash and property. People are going, whoa, there's still going to be a shortage. There's big demand. Yeah, yeah. And I see it now. I have more and more investors every week. It's amazing how people are jumping back in because they think that's going to be there for the next number of years as well and on into the future. And so we're not helping the conversation either.
No, it's a good thing on one hand, but on the other, you've got people who will sit on that land and because they'll make a profit out of it. And why would you do any work on it?
So it's a mindset of the community, and I think on the island, you know, as a whole.
We're never going to fix it.
I listened to the debate, you know, why are we such a fixation on owning our own property? To me, it's just common sense that you own your own property. Because
I hear
the debate constantly as people come towards to the end of their lives and they don't have anywhere to live. They're living at someone else's discretion. Wherever they're staying at someone else's discretion. It makes, you know, to be making a payment, we'll say, of 100 euros for 25 years per month for your mortgage or for your repayment, or to do so for 25 years to pay rent. And at the end of your 25 years, you own that property. As far as the renting situation, you don't. Which one would anyone here go for? Which one? I ask anyone here to say, "Oh no, we go for the option that allows us to pay the 100 euros for 25 years and not own anything."
I know, but
that's
the,
rubbish. No one is going to go for that option.
But at the other end of the scale, I meet so many people, 65, 70 plus and more, and they have a lovely house and they have it. One, it's too big. Number two, then the dilemma is, who am I going to leave it to? What am I going to do with it? Because they're not going to sell it and distribute it. So the last shroud, you know, has no pockets in it. So
or
there is a different conversation. I know what you're saying about people being at the discretion of others. Again, I meet so many in institutions and in other places where it's not by their choice or their family choice.
I was going to say that's a first world problem. You know, people having a big house and wondering, oh dear, what am I going to do with it now? It's way too big for me. That's a marvelous situation to be in because your options are limitless on what you want to do with it. You can realise value from it. You can liquidate your house and go travel the world on an ocean cruise liner. You know, it's not a big dilemma. What you want to do with the property that you own after paying that sum of money over 25 years.
I would say
years.
That's subjective.
Sharon, you wouldn't go on the cruise? No. I think I'd stay here in my big empty house and feel sorry for myself.
We meet people every day who, and I think actually we've touched on a really important puzzle. You've those people who want to get into the market and also those people at the far end of the market in their life cycle. Yeah. And that is actually a really big issue that has to be addressed is to provide a step down in terms of accommodation that people can trade down into, and we don't have that, and that's really important. I mean, if you take the town of Ennis, we're going to have a doubling of people over the age of 65 over the next 20 years, a quadrupling of people over the age of 80. People are living longer and they are in houses that they maybe can't afford, they can afford to maintain, they're afraid to leave. And we meet people in our business who want to trade down all the time, but they're caught in this chicken and egg where they need to have sold in order to buy because their wealth is tied up in the house. They can't trade down. And that doesn't necessarily need to be a big house. It can be a modest enough, you know, home. But if there was a product available there for them, and that, I think, does need state assistance to get that going, and that would unlock a lot of property.
I know a man who recommends ocean cruise liners. We'll be back in a couple of minutes' time.
Clare FM's Morning Focus with Gavin Grace.
Our Friday panel are still with us in studio. Jimmit McMahon, Sharon Cahir and Brian Meaney. We will move on to matters new. And Brian, as a long-time member of the Green Party, as you were, do we know how to recycle? Do you know how to recycle?
I am master at it, Gavin, with my eyes closed, you know. We went for a particular way of dealing with our waste that was kind of standard in Europe, standard worldwide. And that was a particular decision that was made, that we would employ private contractors, we would sort at source. We were extremely bad at it. I have to say that article that I think just Fiona supplied with the notes was they were very informative. We were, I can remember in 97, what was the first year I stood for the Greens in an election here in Clare, and our recycling rates were pitiful, our sorting at rates. So we have grasped that bull by the horns. And we have done fantastic work, but we adopted a particular model, and that model meant sort at source, make sure you were sorting correctly at source, and you were using private companies, which in an industry which is now big business,
employs
a lot of people, generates profit. Whereas there were other models which were, could have been considered at that stage. One was the pay and return. When I was a child, you went around collecting Fanta bottles, Coca-Cola bottles, Lucozade bottles. You brought them up to the local retailer and you got your 5 pence per bottle.
Still happens
around the country.
Yeah,
it could have happened with plastic bottles. It could have happened with Tetra Pak cartons. It could have happened with so many other waste streams. For example, the toilet roll. The toilet roll, the centrepieces, which is made of cardboard. In Armenia, in a certain region I was in, the centrepiece was made of stainless steel. So it had a value, and it was used in producing more toilet rolls. So you know, that what was a particular waste is an item of value. And when items have value, they are not discarded. So you use an economic
So hang on, just to move it along, are we creating too much waste because we don't see or we don't benefit from the value of it?
Correct. It is a simple solution to what is quite a complex problem.
And you still have that plastic bottle recycling, huge in Germany.
You go to Sweden, there is a vending machine or an empty, or whatever the opposite of a vending machine is, where you put your plastic bottle in and you're given a credit.
Yeah.
So these systems exist all over the world. We need to begin to look at that, because the one thing about sets of rules, and you know, your piece was, do we know the rules about recycling?
Yeah,
of course you do. But well, rules will be broken. Nappies will be pelted in to the stacks of cardboard and they're going to be contaminated. So we adopted a particular model. We're actually quite good at it. Some people are flouting the rules. That's just a question of education. That's just a question of coercion. But I do think the correct thing for us to do would be to look at, and the Nordic models, God, they're such a wonderful bunch of people, the Nordic models, we need to look at them for education waste. But the reality is they do things quite differently. And again, the bring bank systems, we need to make sure that give it a monetary value and it will be collected.
In Germany, it's 25 cent for a plastic bottle, sir. I was there a few weeks ago. It's printed on every label. And like Brian said, you go to the supermarket, you drop it into the hole, it's scanned and you get your credit back for the next time you do your shopping. And it's all looked after there. And yesterday, the EPA had a report which said that nearly 70% of waste in Irish business black bins could be recycled elsewhere. They also said nearly half of all household organic waste is still being put in the wrong bins. So I don't think I'm wrong to ask, do you know how to recycle? Not just of you personally, but of us all generally.
And it's funny what you bring up there is that at home we recycle all the time. And the kids are big into it because, again, it's education. They're told in school, it's made exciting, and they tell facts. So my kids come home and tell me certain facts and we go, oh, that's interesting. And so you do it. And I think as a parent, I do it more because I believe it's for the kids' goods and their future, as I say, rather than the government saying, this is how we must do it. But it's interesting how you say in business, we wouldn't be as good in business. And I'm not sure businesses around the town are as good per se, because there's a whole thing about the bins being out, what bins, what days, are they recyclable, pay somebody else to come and collect the cardboard, put the cardboard in a certain way. So I think there is probably an extra heavy lift in business already on people that, I suppose, going about their busy commercial days, whereby it could be made a little bit easier. I don't know what the answer is, and I'm not here professing that everybody should be doing it an awful lot better, but I think the easier you make it, and I, as you described there in Germany, if there's 25 cent or even 5 cent, kids would go around, sorry, don't mind me running around looking for bottles. There is an incentive in it, and it's like the carrot and stick.
And
that's how the world works.
The way it's paid for is that when you buy the bottle, it costs 25 cent more. So that's how it's all funded, and it makes complete sense. And we have a way to go.
I think we definitely have a way to go. And I'd have to say, I think just to commend Brian and the Green Party that time back in the late 90s, because there was the work that they did at that time that really started to change people's mindsets.
The tankless electorate never realised that.
No.
But we are 3%.
But I do remember when we got our first green bin, the first week we had it, the bin was audited. There was actually a little audit done on it, and we got feedback in terms of...
On week one?
Oh, yeah, they did. I remember the green bin arrived behavior. That first week, and they did an audit on it, and they said, look, no, you can't put this in, and you can't put that in one thing or another. And I was even watching a programme there last week that had one of the big recycling companies, and they were going to... Like, they had... the trays that meat come in with cling film over it, and they had plastic trays. They said that's fine, but they said foam trays, no, you can't put that
styrofoam
in.
Styrofoam can't.
Jeez, I didn't know that. So I definitely think there is education that maybe that audit needs to come back in every now and again for people. Maybe not with a penalty, but just as a gentle kind of look, guys, you're doing it wrong here. You need that needs to come back into
hands
it.
Hands up if you want the job of siphoning through people's waste.
Well, somebody is already. Just
it's true.
Somebody
true.
Is siphoning through it. And actually what happens is a truck arrives in and it has two nappies in it and the whole load has to go into landfill. They can't do anything with it. You know what I mean?
But I think it's important to mention that Ireland is way up in the scale. I think, did I read we were seventh?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But in reality, so for people that are doing it, to say, well done, keep on doing it. And it's just, there's always a next level with everything. And it's about, you know, what's the next thing we could add to it? So it is to congratulate people for the efforts they're making. They're making, already.
Well, let's have the target of being first. You know, and say that to people. Look, we're seventh this year, we're sixth, we're fifth. Let's make it a target.
Yeah, the local authority a lot this morning. The bring banks really, really work. The closed banks are full all the time. They're full around the town. So we may need more, or maybe the other depots. The recycling centre out on the Gort Road is fantastic. But if you're a house with two working parents, then it's probably in the evenings, or it may be on a Saturday or a Sunday, or at a time when that recycle bank isn't open. So we have to keep that in mind and making it more accessible for people, because they take clothes, say, out on the, you know, the Gort Road, but at the same time if it's in the evenings or the Sundays and that. So there are other ways we can continue to add to assist the community to do it.
We'll be back at more in a minute. Let us know your thoughts at home.
If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now. 1850 400 964, or email focus@clare.fm.
We had other serious issues that we were going to talk about with our Friday panel, but we've got a silly one that I'm going to get to in a second. Before that, though, quick reminder of our competition question. If you want to win our €50 voucher for Leonard Vaughan's Spa at the Spanish Point Road in Milltown, Malbay, as they celebrate 10 years in business, I'm looking for you to tell me which one of three sporting events happened 10 years ago. Was it the arrival in Ennis of Muhammad Ali for him to be bestowed with the Freeman of the Town? Was it Ireland winning the Rugby Grand Slam for the first time since the 1940s? Or was it Páraí Carrington winning two of golf's four majors in the one season? I'll give you a clue. Two of the three are in the same year. So if you think, that's not much of a clue at all. Help me out here. Somebody give me a clue, do you know? this is where I should think, really, before I open my mouth. I don't want to give you the answer, but a lot of stuff happened in 2009, and two of those did, so one of them didn't. And yeah, one of them was first, and it was outside, and it was over in England, and the golf was there. So send us in your answer, 086 100 964. Let's move on very quickly, and let's forget that and erase it from our collective memories, as we are re-evaluating Dermot McMahon Christmas songs this week. And you wanted to make sure we talked about this morning because of this controversy, in quoted unquote commas, over Baby It's Cold Outside and the line "What's in this drink" that is sung by the female participant in the duet. Is it silly to reevaluate old songs, or is it PC-ness gone mad?
I think it's completely appropriate. And not only that, I think there's many songs we could go back and revisit, Gavin. We just discussed off here. I saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. There's another one that could go.
Really?
I don't know. Look, it's of a time. There's a tongue in cheek, but there's, you know what? The song does have a line where it's plying somebody with drink. Mm. But to be fair, if you read the rest of the lyrics in the song, it doesn't say why he wants her to stay for the night.
I think it's fairly obvious.
No, it isn't obvious. Maybe he was very concerned. It was cold outside. he was worried for her welfare. Maybe she'd already had a drink. Maybe she was concerned about drink driving home that night. That's lighthearted.
Okay.
But on a more serious note, I happen to print off the lyrics of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. And it could be seen as offensive and ageist. But as for me and Grandpa, we believe she'd been drinking too much eggnog. And we begged her not to go, but she forgot her medication. And she staggered out the door into the snow. When we found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack, she had hoof prints on her forehead and incriminating claw marks on her back. For one, reindeer don't have claws, they're hooves. So, I mean, I think reindeers can be offended, elderly people can be offended. Yeah. Where does it begin and end?
Another one to delete off the system.
I think Granny has to take a claim.
Says the solicitor. Is this nuts? It's silly.
I mean, you know, what's even more interesting is I love that song when Christmas comes around, and then they were playing it, Santa Baby. And I was in one of the late night talk shows on television, and then they played the video with it, and it looked more like a Disney video with this lotion potion going into the glass, and it was all over. I said, oh, I never knew they were the words, because I'm listening to the melody of it. You're having fun around an awful lot of these songs around Christmas time. I'm certainly not listening to the words. So I'm much more educated as I sit here today. Am I going to take out my Christmas CDs and bin the ones that
cross
it's on
off,
I'm not really, if I'm honest. And I think there is a balance we have to find about being PC and everything being correct, because the problem is we'll all pull so far into ourselves for fear of saying something out and offending somebody. So there is a point at which we do check each other. There's no doubt, you know, as a society we're killed checking each other at the moment, but yeah, I mean, it's some of those. It's an interesting debate for me. I'm not getting upset over it.
Okay, fair enough. I mean I don't want to say it's a dilemma for radio stations, because I think our audiences are grown up and they can make up their own minds, and if they don't like it, let them turn it off.
I think the narrative this week just grew more surreal as the week progressed. It started off with the Baby It's Cold Outside being proposed to be banned from the playlists of Christmas FM. Is that a station?
There's one in Ireland, but also one in the States.
There was a request from animal rights activists that we do not use phrases like, as I used there a while ago, to catch a bull by the horns, that it's upsetting to people who like animals, or plenty of ways to skin a cat being another one, or you couldn't swing a cat, that we should stop using these phrases. And then it progressed on to the usual brouhaha that occurs every year about a particular line in the fairy tale of New York in relation to the large bundles of sticks that someone has referred to as the faggot of, you cheap lousy faggot. But to be quite honest, I think, you know, how do these things gain traction? Do people write into radio stations? Do they make complaints to the broadcasting authority? Because if there is, I'm certainly going to make a complaint to here and to broadcasting authority. I'm offended by Christmas. I'm offended by the entire notion of Christmas. There was a song on yesterday evening on the news. It's a wonderful time of the year. You know this song?
Yeah.
Well, it isn't a most bloody wonderful time of year. Say that to a homeless person sitting in a doorway trying to figure out where they're going to get their next morsel of the food from, or try to shelter and keep warm from the cold. It's not a particularly wonderful time of the year. So there's a whole tranche of people who don't consider it a wonderful time of the year. I don't consider it a wonderful time of the year. Bloody annoyed by it. So I don't want it referred to as a wonderful time of the year. I want the thing banned.
Do you want to just get it in our system and delete the songs you don't like?
No, I think I just want to make a complaint and say, get this thing. I don't do social media, so maybe Sharon, you do that. Could you make a complaint for me? That'd be fantastic.
Are we...
I think we do have to remember, and I know this started off, I suppose, tongue-in-cheek, is that Brian is right in not with the cranky Brian that's there about Christmas, but in reality, there are people who've lost loved ones during the year.
Of course, there is that, where
any Christmas, you know, might be a situation where something has arisen, it just takes a different shape for those people. Loneliness, we talked about, it is important to recognise that it is just not the happy clappy time, and plus we've a lot of other religious people in different religions, that is, it isn't about Christ and Christmas, you know, it's not the same significant time for them as well.
I don't think Christmas has been about religion for majority of people for a long time now. To any of my colleagues and friends, Christmas is about celebrating smallies, about small children. This is what we do. It's a time for them.
I have a 10-year-old who can't get to Mass fast enough to sing in the choir on Christmas morning. So there are things, and it is about, and you're right, as I get closer to the time when I may not have children sitting around in the same way, is that a little bit of that Christmas, it changes. The dynamic of it changes. It's up 100%. To all of us then to decide, what's the significance of it? What's it going to be? And even if it means just going into your neighbour with an eggnog or whatever.
No, don't like eggnog. Anyways, we'll leave it at that. I need to leave there, and I will thank you all very much for joining us this morning.
You
I think
welcome to Clare FM.
I'll tell you off air and hope that you forget it. Brian, thank you. And thanks, Sharon. And thanks, Jared, as well. We're back with some live music of the Unoffensive Variety in a couple of minutes' time.
Join the conversation in Clare on Facebook, Twitter, or call 1850 400 964.